was a mighty nation, blessed above all of creation. It was a rare and precious pearl.
Welcome back, everyone, to Resurrected Republic RTR Truth Radio broadcast on the RBN Network. I am your host, Lori Anderson, along with co-host Eric Hughes Jones, known as Freedom Screamer. And make sure you visit his website. And what was that website once again, Eric?
Ours is courtroomwatch.org. That's C-O-U-R-T-R-O-O-M. The next word is watch, W-A-T-C-H, courtroomwatch.org.
Wonderful, wonderful. Thank you for giving that out.
Yeah, and we're going to be posting some, documents. I think it seemed wise for me to wait. Lori, I'm just going to do this on air. You can disagree if you'd like, and we're still friends. when the administration changes, I think will be a much better time to submit a habeas corpus on Tom's behalf to the federal court than do it now. We know we're spitting into the wind, trying to assume that. And if this may lead into the Ammon Bundy clip that I did not get to play yet, so if you want to roll that, tonight, Lori, you feel free to do that.
We'll probably have to do that tomorrow night. But you know what?
Okay,
I agree with you on that, Eric. And I'm going to tell you, everybody, 9 more days.
Right. And so I think at that time, I'll keep my criticisms to a minimum until the administration comes in. And one of the first things I want to see, and it's going to be Jeff Sessions' call or one of his immediate underling deputies. This is a pretty high-profile case with Tom. And if we put a lot of phone calls on his office, it'll be a high-profile case. We can make it that. We're all trained kind of to sit back and say, is it high-profile or is it not based on what we see? We can do the acts and the actions and the phone calls that make it a high-profile case. If they get 1,000 phone calls on Tom's case at the vicar's office, at the sheriff's office, and at Jeff Sessions' office, they're going to be a lot more likely to push that button that opens the door and Tom walks out. This is a victimless offense once again. I'm sick and tired of hearing all these federal prosecutors and judges claim that somehow the state or society can be a victim. It's a fictitious entity that does not exist in fact. Only a living man or woman can show damages. Is the federal attorney's office claiming that Tom did them harm? Is the federal prosecutor claiming that Tom harmed him directly? Are the state police or the federal agents that kidnapped him in New Jersey, are they claiming that Tom harmed them personally? Where's the damage? There isn't any. So I expect Jeff Sessions to drop the case against Tom within 5 days after he gets in office. That's enough time that would be in sync with the habeas corpus, which is 3 to 5 days.
Well, and just to say that, if he had done anybody harm, then I find it ironic it took him almost 12 months to do anything about it.
Right, and then hold him, claiming he's a threat to society. You let him run around the streets for 12 months, he didn't do anything harmful except to appear on this radio show, getting the word out to people.
That's harmful to the fake media.
Right, but Lori's right. To the enemy, it's harming them with no damage to anyone, and they're making up things that claim that they can be a victim. You have a state which is a fictitious entity claiming victim status, and it's classifying us living men and women as property. How's that for inverted?
And I tell you what I'm going to do, Eric, and for the listeners, I'm probably going to cover more into the stuff that is going on with Russia and that other stuff that we're discussing right now, tomorrow, because I have some more stuff to pull up. But there's certain, I've got a caller on the line, and I want to take the caller, and then I want to discuss the other issue. But tomorrow I want to revisit about the U.S. troops being sent and the stuff about General Mattis, because this is so important. People need to really, truly understand not only the hypocrisy. And we love our men and women in the military. We don't want one of them to lose their life. And that is one of the reasons we're so against invading other countries. Mike, were you able to find the clip that Eric was speaking about Okay, we're going to take this clip, and Carol, please still hold on. After this clip, I'm going to take your call, so please hold on. But I want the audience to hear this, and I want Carol to hear this in case she is discussing this. Now, this was exposed way before anything ever happened in Syria. If I'm not mistaken, it's before anything happened in Libya. Am I correct on that, Eric, or not?
Yeah, this was Wesley Clark. We'll let it speak for itself, but yeah, it's Wesley Clark was given the plan ahead of time by one of his comrades at the Pentagon, and they said, "Here's what's coming." And you know, of course, Wesley Clark sounded like he was surprised. I don't know if he was, but this is the plan that was given to him, and it is the plan that manifested itself in fact.
Okay, so let's play this so that people can understand. This has been in the plans and in the workings for a very long time. People need to also really understand our U.S. military takes its marching orders from NATO. If you want to do your own research, research and pull up, Leon Panetta tells Jeff Sessions that they take orders from NATO. So if you would, Mike, go ahead and play that clip, and then I'll take a call from Carol, and then I'm going to cover the other situation that has really broke my heart when I heard it.
About 10 days after 9/11, I went through the Pentagon, and I saw Secretary Rumsfeld and Deputy Secretary Wolfowitz. I went downstairs just to say hello to some of the people on the joint staff who had used to work for me. And one of the generals called me and he said, "Sir, you got to come in. You got to come in and talk to me a second." I said, "Well, you're too busy." He said, No. He says, "We've made the decision. We're going to war with Iraq." This was on or about the 20th of September. I said, "We're going to war with Iraq. Why?" He said, "I don't know." He said, "I guess they don't know what else to do." So I said, "Well, did they find some information connecting Saddam to al-Qaeda?" He said, no. He says, "There's nothing new that way. They've just made the decision to go to war with Iraq." He said, "I guess it's like we don't know what to do about terrorists, but we've got a good military and we can take down governments." And he said, "I guess if the only tool you have is a hammer, every problem has to look like a nail." So I came back to see him a few weeks later, and by that time we were bombing in Afghanistan. I said, "Are we still going to war with Iraq?" And he said, "Oh, it's worse than that." He said, he reached over on his desk, he picked up a piece of paper, and he said, I just got this down from upstairs, meaning the Secretary of Defense's office today, and he said, "This is a memo that describes how we're going to take out seven countries in 5 years, starting with Iraq and then Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and finishing off Iran." The truth is about the Middle East is, had there been no oil there, it would be like Africa. Nobody is threatening to intervene in Africa. The problem is the opposite. We keep asking for people to intervene and stop it. And there's no question that the presence of petroleum throughout the region has sparked great power involvement. Whether that was the specific motivation for the coup or not, I can't tell you, but there was definitely, there's always been this attitude that somehow we could intervene and use force in the region.
Okay. So with that being said, in this article it says approximately 54 U.S. military personnel were killed in Iraq in 2011. Does anybody realize that from 2003 to 2011, there were approximately 500,000 Iraqi civilians that were killed? That's the ones we know about. That's 500,000 Iraqis in an unlawful invasion. And we're supposed to listen to General Mattis with him being upset because 54 U.S. military personnel were killed in Iraq in 2011. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't want one of our troops killed. I'm an ex-military wife myself. I stand for the veterans. I stand for our military, but I don't stand for following unlawful orders. I don't stand for being part of NATO that is destroying the globe. I can stand for our military and love our military and love our veterans and still stand against invading other people's countries. And that just shows that I actually do love them, because I'm not willing to put their lives at risk over theft of land and minerals and robbing their resources. So, as promised, Carol, how are you doing this evening?
I'm fine. Thank you, Lori, and hi, Eric. Powerful, powerful programming, reporting that you're doing. God bless you. It's depressing, it's upsetting, but so necessary. Lori, I'm kind of off topic now because I called in when you were discussing the press conference of Donald Trump today.
Okay, sure, go ahead.
The reason I called in was just to share an observation with you. It may seem like a small matter compared to definitely all the horrendous things that you've just now been reporting regarding the invasion of nations and the murdering that American troops are doing all over the world. But anyway, as I watched the press conference today, I was struck again by those beautiful American flags that were the backdrop for the podium, right? I don't know if you noticed, there were 10 flags, and each one had a beautifully displayed gold rope and tassels, very prominently displayed. And I don't know how many of your audience folks are aware, but
Admiralty.
My understanding, those gold tassels and that gold fringe has to do with Admiralty.
Yes, it does.
And so the reason I'm mentioning it is because Tom Lacovara and his friend Bruce Ray Riggs, from day one, they've always been about the fact that our government, our Constitution, is built on God-given rights and liberties as guaranteed under the common law. Mm-hmm. And yet, when you put a fourth color on the American flag, pretending to decorate it, oh, isn't it beautiful? Yeah, it was a wonderful sight. But when you know that that fourth color doesn't belong there, it gives you a totally different feeling about it. And, Lori, I just wondered if you or Eric or anybody else noticed that. And I'll just say this one comment before you respond. But I wrote an email sending the link of the press conference to two different emails that I have for Donald Trump's support group, his advisor group. They invite people to send emails and messages and what you'd like the president to do. And I did that, and I asked the Trump supporters to please make Mr. Trump aware of the difference between common law jurisdiction that our Constitution is based on versus admiralty, which is foreign jurisdiction. And I wonder what you might think about that.
Well, number one, yes, that was one of the first things I noticed. Yes, you are correct. That is admiralty flags. Yes, that bothers me, but we also know admiralty falls under the de facto, not the de jure. And as many of the listeners know, and I'm sure you know, you have more than one constitution. The Constitution of the United States are the bylaws for the de facto, and that's what I call them because that's exactly what they are. They're just bylaws for that corporation. A lot of people will try to call in and say, oh, it's not a corporation. Before you call in and tell me that, please look up 28 U.S. Code 3002 and read Section 15 A, B, and C before you call and try to tell me it is not a corporation, because they even admit it in their own code. So now that we've covered that, the fact of the matter is Donald Trump is CEO of United States of America Incorporated, which is the de facto. That's a fact. However, the good news is, or at least what appears to be, wording means everything to individuals, especially listeners here on resurrect the republic and people who are aware of the difference between de facto and de jure, that means everything. And if you will pay attention to wording, although he may not understand it all, you can tell he is trying to. And he is using a lot of de jure terms along with the de facto. So we're under no illusion that he is president over the de facto, but I believe he is going to be a president over the de facto that will work with the de jure. Does that make sense, Carol?
Yes, that's a hopeful thought, comment.
Yes. Right.
I wondered whether Mr. Trump has any idea of the two different jurisdictions, and that's why
yes,
I wrote to his people.
Yes, because before Tom was unlawfully kidnapped by the federal government, he had reported and let us know that the Trump administration had reached out to him and gotten documentation from Tom about the 14th Amendment and the different issues. So he is still learning. And we do have to give him a little bit of breathing room because a lot of us who are on here and a lot of the listeners have been studying this for years. And we need to understand that we can't expect him to know everything all at one time. And it is a major fight right now just getting him in that seat.
I
think he is striving to learn more. I do not think he is going to rest on any laurels. I may be wrong. If I am proven wrong, I will gladly say I am wrong. I am not too proud to do that.
Wouldn't it be nice, Lori, if Mr. Trump does learn about the different, the correct jurisdiction, even if he is CEO of a corporation, when he goes before the American people, when he does a press conference, when he does State of the Union, anything, wouldn't it be wonderful if he would simply say to his preparers, I want a flag of three colors standing beside me or behind me. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't that be nice? He wouldn't have to even make an
yes.
issue of it, but yep. but he could put the correct flag there.
Right, and that would signal to people who don't have a clue. I mean, it would signal to the people who do know
right.
that he knows.
Thank you for your time, Lori. Thank you very much. God bless you.
You're very welcome.
Great work you're doing.
Thank you, and God bless you. Thank you for calling in. Be sure to call in again.
I will. Thank you.
You're welcome. Now I have some news. First, I'm going to play something that's going to cheer you up a little bit. And then I've got some news that I want to go over. And, Eric, this news is so sad. I really wish I was in your area. Maybe you can actually help because you're in the New York area. So the story that I'm going to cover after this last clip, I am going to cover this, and it is actually a story out of New York. So maybe you and some people in your area can help this gentleman. So anyway, I want to, because, and the reason I want to go ahead and play this clip, I was holding off and thinking maybe I wasn't going to, but Eric keeps on making good points. When Jeff Sessions becomes the Attorney General, we expect him to do what is right. And let me tell you, he's probably, reality is, Eric, and you know this is true, he's probably going to receive a lot of habeases, a lot of complaints against these unlawful judges that are just crushing people's rights. You know this. But we
no,
do
not
have
only
to,
habeases, but claims and liens as well. I wouldn't put that,
right.
I wouldn't, all the tools in the box.
Right. And so we're going to give benefit of the doubt just like we do with anybody. But let's make no mistake, Resurrect the Republic, RTR Truth Radio broadcast on RBN is going to hold everyone accountable. I don't care if you have an R behind your name. I don't care if you have a D behind your name. I don't care if you have an I behind your name. We do not care about that. We care about truth, and we care about what is right. And as long as you stand and do what is right and not corrupt. We're not talking about accidents. We're talking about intentional corruption. We're going to come after you full bore. It does not matter who you are. So I'm playing this for you, Eric, as well as for our listeners. And this actually happened during the confirmation hearing for the Attorney General appointee, Jeff Sessions. And this is Ted Cruz. Now let me be specific. Al Franken and the Democrats in the Senate were trying to portray Jeff Sessions as pro-KKK, Black Lives Matter was there. They were trying to make this into a spectacle, which, of course, is expected because, you know, they have nothing else other than their fictitious junk. And the craziness of accusing Jeff Sessions of being pro-KKK is really past the point of insane. Fake media has reported about, you know, him being pro-KKK and this, that, and the other. He put and helped put a KKK member to death for his actions. He helped to sue KKK. This is back in the day, of course. He stood for what was right, not what was white. So, on that note, if you could, Mike, go ahead and play LV4, and then we're going to get to the other topic that is really just breaking my heart.
Senator Sessions, congratulations on your nomination.
Thank you.
You are a friend. You are a man of integrity. You and I have worked closely together on this committee, on the Armed Services Committee, and I have every confidence you are going to make a superb Attorney General. You know, this has been an interesting day at this hearing, listening to Democratic Senator after Democratic Senator give speeches in praise of the rule of law. And I am heartened by that. I am encouraged by that. Because for 8 years, it's been absent. For 8 years, we've seen a Department of Justice consistently disregarding the rule of law. When Eric Holder's Department of Justice allowed illegal gun transactions, illegally sold guns to Mexican gun traffickers as part of Fast and Furious, guns that were later used to murder Border Patrol agent Brian Terry, the Democratic members of this committee were silent. When Eric Holder was found in contempt of Congress for refusing to cooperate with Congress's investigation into Fast and Furious, once again, the Democratic members of this committee were silent. When the IRS illegally targeted United States citizens for exercising the First Amendment views, for exercising their roles in the political process, Democratic members of this committee were silent. When the Department of Justice refused to fairly investigate the IRS targeting citizens and indeed assigned the investigation to a liberal partisan Democrat who had given over $6,000 to President Obama and Democrats, Democrats on this committee were silent. When numerous members of this committee called on the Attorney General to appoint a special prosecutor to ensure that justice was done in the IRS case, Democrats on this committee were silent. When the Justice Department began using Operation Choke Point to target law-abiding citizens that they disagreed with politically,
Black Lives Matter.
Yikes, what the heck is that?
Black Lives Matter.
You know, free speech is a wonderful thing. When the Department of Justice used Operation Choke Point to target legal businesses because they disagreed politically with those businesses, the Democrats on this committee were silent. When the Obama Justice Department sent millions of dollars of taxpayer monies to sanctuary cities that were defying federal immigration law, the Democrats on this committee were silent. When the Obama administration refused to enforce federal immigration laws and unilaterally rewrote those laws, the Democrats on this committee were silent. when the Obama administration released tens of thousands of criminal illegal aliens, including rapists and murderers, into the general population, Democrats on this committee were silent. When the Department of Justice signed off on the Obama administration paying a nearly $2 billion ransom to Iran, contrary to federal law, the Democrats on this committee were silent. When the Obama administration ignored and rewrote provision after provision of Obamacare, contrary to the text of the law, the Democrats on this committee were silent. When the Obama administration signed off on illegal recess appointments that the Supreme Court had to strike down unanimously, the Democrats on this committee were silent. And when the Obama administration released five Guantanamo terrorists without the required notification of Congress, the Democrats on this committee were silent. That pattern has been dismaying for 8 years, but I take today as a moment of celebration. If once again this committee has a bipartisan commitment to rule of law, to following the law, that is a wonderful thing, and it is consistent with the tradition of this committee going back centuries. Now, if we were to play a game of tit for tat, if what was good for the goose were good for the gander, then a Republican attorney general should be equally partisan, should disregard the law, should advance political preferences favored by the Republican Party. Senator Sessions, do you believe that would be appropriate for an attorney general to do?
No, I do not. I believe...
For an attorney general to do?
No, I do not. I believe you. And I think we do have to be aware that when something like this is done, and some of the things I... familiar with enough to agree with you that I thought were improper, I do believe it has a corrosive effect on public confidence in the constitutional republic of which we are sworn to uphold.
I think you are exactly right. You and I are both alumni of the Department of Justice, and it has a long bipartisan tradition of staying outside of partisan politics, of simply and fairly enforcing the law. I will say right now, if I believed that you would implement policies, even policies I agreed with, contrary to law, I would vote against your confirmation. And the reason I am so enthusiastically supporting your confirmation is I have every degree of confidence you will follow the law faithfully and honestly. And that is the first and most important obligation of the Attorney General. Now, earlier in this hearing, Senator Franken engaged you in a discussion that I think was intended to try to undermine your character and integrity. And in particular, Senator Franken suggested that you had somehow misrepresented your record. It is unfortunate to see members of this body impugn the integrity of a fellow senator with whom we have served for years. It is particularly unfortunate when that attack is not backed up by the fact. Senator Franken based his attack primarily on an op-ed written by an attorney, Gerald Hebert. There is an irony in relying on Mr. Hebert because, as you well know, in 1986, during your confirmation hearing, Mr. Hebert testified then and attacked you then, making false charges against you. And indeed, I would note in the 1986 hearing, 2 days later, Mr. Hebert was forced to recant his testimony to say that he had given false testimony to this committee, and indeed to say, quote, "I apologize for any inconvenience caused Mr. Sessions or this committee by my prior testimony." So an individual who's testified falsely once before this committee, his op-ed is now the basis for Senator Franken's attack on you. And indeed, the basis of Senator Franken's attack is he claims you were uninvolved in several civil rights cases that were listed on your questionnaire. In 1986... Mr. Hebert testified, this is a quote from him, "I have needed Mr. Sessions' help in those cases, and he has provided that help every step of the way." Is that correct that that's what Mr. Hebert testified?
Yes, that's correct.
Now, in the four cases Senator Franken referred to, you reported all four of them in your supplement to the Judiciary Committee. Is that right?
That is correct.
Mr. Franken didn't mention that. And let me point out, here's how you describe your involvement in your written submission to this committee. Quote, "If For the cases described in 2, 4, 8, and 9, my role, like most U.S. attorneys in the nation, and not with non-criminal civil rights cases, was to provide support for the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division's attorneys. I reviewed, supported, and co-signed complaints, motions, and other pleadings and briefs that were filed during my tenure as U.S. attorney. I provided assistance and guidance to the civil rights attorneys, had an open-door policy with them, and cooperated with them on these cases. For the cases described in 6, I supervised litigation and signed the pleadings. Now, that is consistent with the 1986 testimony that you provided help every step of the way. Is that correct?
Well, I think so, yes.
There's no question you've been forthright with this committee, and I would note that members of this committee don't have to search far and wide to know who Jeff Sessions is. We've known every day sitting at this bench alongside you. I want to shift to a different topic, and it's the topic I opened with, which is the politicization of the Department of Justice. The Office of Legal Counsel has a critical role of providing sound legal and constitutional advice, both to the Attorney General and the President. And in the last 8 years, we have seen a highly politicized OLC, an OLC that has given politically convenient rulings, whether on recess appointments, whether on executive amnesty. And early on, perhaps that was started by 2009, Attorney General Holder overruling OLC concerning legislation trying to grant the District of Columbia representation in Congress. And it may well be that that sent a message to OLC that its opinions were to be political and not legal in nature. Tell me, Senator Sessions, what will you do as Attorney General to restore professionalism and fidelity to law to the Office of Legal Counsel?
Senator Cruz, I think any short-term political agenda gains that come from the abuse of the lawmaking processes and requirements of the Department of Justice don't make sense. It will always, in the long run, be more damaging than short-term gain that one might have. The Office of Legal Counsel, all of us who served in the department know, is a big-time position. You need a mature, smart, experienced person who understands this government, who understands the laws, and is principled and consistent in their application of the laws. That will help the President, it will help the Congress, and it will help the American people. I do believe we need to work hard to have that, and I will do my best to ensure we do have it.
One final question. In the last 8 years, the Department of Justice's Solicitor General's office has also, I believe, been unfortunately politicized. And it sustained an unprecedented number of unanimous losses before the United States Supreme Court. Indeed, President Obama's Justice Department won less than half of its total cases before the Supreme Court, which is the lowest presidential win rate since Harry Truman. The average historically for the last 50 years has been about 70%. Numerous of those cases were unanimous, with indeed both Obama Supreme Court appointees voting against the lawless positions of this Justice Department, including their assertion that the government has the authority to supervise and direct the appointment and the clergy in the church. What will you do as Attorney General to ensure the integrity of the Office of Solicitor General, that it is faithful to the law and not advancing extreme political positions like the Obama Justice Department did that have been rejected over and over again by the Supreme Court?
I think the problem there is a desire to achieve a result sometimes that overrides the commitment to the law. In the long run, this country will be stronger if we adhere to the law, even though somebody might be frustrated in the short term of not achieving an agenda. The Solicitor General should not advocate to alter the meaning of words to advance an agenda. That is an abuse of office, and I would try to seek to have a Solicitor General who is faithful to the Constitution, serves under the Constitution, does not feel it has the power to rise above it and make it say what it wants it to say.
Thank you, Senator Sessions.
Amen. And if you notice, he said constitutional republic. But if you also noticed, it was exposed that they were appointing clergy in the church. Think about that. You can also Google it. You can find documents on it from the government itself. Clergy response teams, FEMA clergy response teams. you can come up with those documents. Might blow your mind. That's one of the reasons they had issues in Hurricane Katrina. Okay, so now I'm going to get to covering, hopefully, Eric, maybe we can do something about this. Ironically, fake news media is not covering this. The only places I have found this information are three. New York Daily News covered it. Freedom Outpost covered it. And the Washington Standard covered it. There may be others who have covered it. I'm not going to say they haven't. I'm saying I have not heard any of the fake news like CNN, MSNBC, or anybody else cover what I'm getting ready to cover with you all. And I really hope and pray that there are law enforcement officers that are listening to my voice right now. I really do. Because this message is really to you. On January 6, 2017, it was reported that cops tossed out a homeless man's stuff and his crutches. This man is out of, he was in Brooklyn, New York. And this is what the report says. A homeless man who lives outside Prospect Park in Brooklyn says cops and sanitation workers tossed many of his belongings in the trash, including clothes, blankets, even his crutches. Thomas Harris, known as the Drum Man, only has one leg. A neighbor grabbed his wheelchair, fearing city workers would discard it as well. The drama between the man and the city workers began Tuesday night and resumed on Wednesday. Harris and witnesses told the Daily News the 59-year-old spoke to the news on Thursday, a day after the city confirmed a $1,515 settlement to compensate three homeless men who threatened to sue the city after their belongings were discarded by cops and sanitation workers in East Harlem on October 2015. This is a quote. They treated me like a piece of shit. He said, while on a gurney in the emergency room at Kings County Hospital, I was crying like a baby and it was humiliating. Harris, who is missing his right leg, would often sell small drums from his heap of belongings at Prospect Park Drum Circle, locals said. Police left his stuff behind for sanitation workers to trash, except for the drums, witnesses said. Quote, you can see it in the Daily News, he said, as he held New York's hometown newspaper. They are taking homeless people's stuff and throwing it in the trash. I'm just the latest, unquote. The news reported on the settlement in Thursday's paper. A police official strongly denied that police threw away most of Harris's belongings. The spokesman said 23 drums, 14 wall fans and other possessions were vouchered for safekeeping. Bottles of urine and other garbage were thrown away, the official said. Harris said that in addition to his crutches, blankets, clothing, his bicycle, backpacks, and cookware were confiscated. The whole thing to me, it was disturbing, said Nesla Malone, a musician who filmed parts of the encounter. Yes, this was lucky enough to be put on film. The settlement with the three homeless men did not come with any change in policy, but New York Civil Liberties Union lawyer Jordan Wells said the group is pursuing a separate suit to do just that. Stephen Davis, the NYPD's top spokesman, said standard policy is for the homeless to be able to take their personal items with them when moved. District Leader Jeffrey Davis, who also was at the scene, said everything but the man's drums was tossed. Quote, it is not your call to say what is valuable and what isn't. Those are his belongings. They shouldn't have been tossed in the garbage, Davis said. He's a very nice man, very independent, doesn't bother anyone, Davis said. He'll have a conversation with you, but he just wants to do his own thing. Harris lost his leg when he was hit by a train while trying to retrieve his drums from the tracks of the Franklin Avenue station in November of 2012. He also lost two fingers on his left hand from the crash. He's been living in the street for 2 years. His reconstructed hip was hurt during the confrontation with police, he said. They tried to put me in the psych ward, but there isn't a blank thing wrong with me, Harris said. Keisha Bernaska, I hope I said that name correctly, 35 years old, started a GoFundMe page for Harris, took him some food at the hospital, and returned his wheelchair. A police source said assignments to remove the homeless are dreaded by beat cops. Quote, most officers would prefer to have the homeless be addressed via social services, unquote, the police source said. I have so many issues with this. And I'm really trying not to break down as I talk to you about this. So let's dissect. First of all, we have a homeless man, a man who is vulnerable to the weather. New York is cold. These individuals took it upon themselves to steal. That is theft. They knew it didn't belong to them. Anyone thinking just because somebody is homeless that it can be belonging to them and they can throw it away are sadly mistaken. Let me tell you something. This is a definition of personal property. Everything that is the subject of ownership that does not come under the denomination of real property, any right or interest that an individual has in movable things. Personal property can be divided into two major categories. Corporal personal property, including such items as animals, merchandise, and jewelry, and two, incorporal personal property, compromised of such rights as stocks, bonds, patents, and copyrights. Possession is a property interest under which an individual is able to exercise power over something to the exclusion of all others. It is a basic property right that entitles the possessor to the right to continue peaceful possession against everyone except someone having a superior right. I'm not going to go into the massive definition. So we know that these blankets, cookware, if that were done to an animal, people would be outraged. If an animal is left outside without shelter, people get outraged. But did you let it be one of our most vulnerable, a homeless man or a homeless woman? And it is okay to take their source of warmth, which would be the blankets, so they can possibly freeze to death. To take their pots and pans on which they would cook with because they don't have a brick and mortar home. Now, we don't know the situation that caused him to be homeless. Could it have been this cruddy economy? Could it have been because of the corrupt actions of the government giving money to the bankers while they kicked people out of their homes? It doesn't matter. That was his personal property. And that was theft. Larceny is the unauthorized taking and removal of the personal property of another by an individual who intends to permanently deprive the owner of it. It is a crime against the right of possession. Larceny generally refers to nonviolent theft. And it is a common law term. So in the state of New York, Article 1, Section 11, it states, no person shall be denied the equal protection of the laws of this state or any subdivision thereof. No person shall, because of race or color or creed or religion, be subjected to any discrimination in his or her civil rights by any other person or by any firm, corporation, or institution, or by the state, or any agency or subdivision of the state. Article 1, Section 12. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. And no warrant shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Do you think any of them had a warrant to seize this man's property? And they didn't just seize it. They threw it away. Now, here's the kicker, something else you won't hear. And if you go to my G+, under Resurrect the Republic, RTR Truth Radio Broadcast, you can pull up the article, and you can hear his testimony. It was a black sergeant that told this black homeless man, quote, "Don't come back to Ocean Avenue," unquote. Who do you think you are? How dare you? Did it not fit mainstream media's narrative? Or was it because they didn't give a rip? Because it was a homeless man. What has become of our society when this is allowed to happen? And what will you do to make that difference? Because silence is compliance. And as we all know, truth is treason in an empire of lies. And any police officer, and including the people who were running the trash truck, how dare you? Would it be okay for us to go to your home and start throwing out your stuff in the garbage? So because he doesn't have a home to go to, you feel like it's okay for you to be bullies? I don't care what your code says. Constitutionally speaking, you have nothing to stand on. And the individual police officers who were involved with this, and the black sergeant who was involved with this, I hope that when you look in yourself in the mirror, I hope you see it over and over again until you repent for what you've done. Turn from those ways and start actually making a difference instead of bullying individuals who are less fortunate than you are. Because let me tell you, one day that just may be you, sir.
Let's not forget, that's the New York City that Giuliani built.
Yeah.
It became that police state nightmare under his iron fist. And they always put somebody soft-spoken forward, like a Harry Reid or a Giuliani or a Bush or a Alberto Gonzalez, who's really soft-spoken, and they think, you would never hurt a flea, and they talk real quietly, and kind of suited into accepting whatever tyranny they come up with. But that's a nightmare. That's what happens. And I don't say this because I have an agenda or to be mean, but invariably, constantly, always, whenever I run into somebody who works for government, it's this type of ice cold person who has no compassion, no empathy, and they think they can do no wrong, and everybody else in the general public is guilty until proven innocent. and they're entitled to steal as much money as they want from us through anything and everything that they can make up. New York has 750,000 regulations on small businesses. How are you going to have anything here? Most of these towns in western New York are shut down, and this is because New York has become a giant police state. Of course, the police barracks is big and brand new, and it's huge, and it's got a beautiful parking lot. Everybody in there's got a brand new car. Everything around it is all broken down and taxed out directly because the police are enforcing these New York codes that are destroying people's lives, destroying their freedom, destroying the economy. So where's a man like this going to work? He can't afford to open a drum shop. The rules and regulations, he'd have to jump through a New York City to open a drum shop, get an investor and open it. It would be impossible. You can't do it unless you have millions, unless you get a couple million handed to you early like Donald Trump did. Then it's sure, it's easy to rocket off into success. Try starting from zero. Okay, so a lot of people get locked into this homeless loop, and it's all they have. So it's a hopeless situation, and I do whatever and anything I can to help the gentleman. It defies all. Invariably, people like this gravitate toward government, and I see it in all of my interactions at all the levels and all the municipalities and county offices. It's very cold and it's very heartless. And this is the communist occupation we're under. 19 of the 20, if not 20 out of the 20, points of the Communist Manifesto are now in place. Just go through it. Look, folks, look at the Communist Manifesto and compare it to what we're living under. So anyway, it's a very sad situation.
At what point? You know, I saw a protest, and Tony will be with you in just a moment. We have a caller on the line, by the way, Eric. But I saw a protest, and it was, I can't remember whether it was in, I can't remember what country it was in, to be honest with you. But it really made a difference. And we'll go into further discussion about that on a different day. But let me tell you what they did, Eric. You know, they had the police state lineup getting ready to go against the protesters. Protesters were unarmed. And you know what the protesters did? And I think this is a wonderful idea. I think this is something we need to implement if you're going to protest. Bring mirrors. Because these protesters, what they did is they brought mirrors, pretty large mirrors that would cover like from middle of the chest to above their head, pretty large size mirrors, and they had put handles on the back to make it as if it was a shield. And when the police started doing their aggressive tactics and everything else, you know what they did? All the front line lifted their mirrors simultaneously, and they were looking themselves in the face. They had to see what they looked like. They had to see exactly what they were doing to the protesters. And some of those police officers took off their helmets and actually went around to the other side and joined the protesters. And I think that is a good idea. They need to see themselves. Not later on in a video. They need to see exactly what they're doing, what they are, and how dare you claim that you're trying to protect the people when you're doing stuff like this to somebody? How dare you?
Who are they protecting by locking up Tom? It's never about protection anymore. It's all, and this is why I don't want to see this new Justice Department woefully lacking in conceptual reform, meaning fundamentals. The state cannot be a victim. Tom LaGuevara hurt no one, and he's still being held when he should be here tonight.
Exactly. 9 more days. We're counting. In the speech today, President-elect Donald Trump did state that his Supreme Court pick or nominee should be within the first 2 weeks after the inauguration. Now, does this mean, and we want to make this clear, we give people benefit of the doubt. We watch, we report. But do we think that this man is going to heal our union? He may help, but he is not going to do it. It is always bottom up, people. It is our responsibility in our neighborhoods. It is our responsibility. It is never going to work top down. Never. And, you know, Eric, I'm not even going to lie. My heart is broken. And this individual, you can tell in the video that they have in this article, you can tell that he's older, he's set in his ways. You can tell he's had a rough life, you know. Because they were trying to force him into a mental evaluation. He was like, he's not doing that.
That's their main trick. That's their big scam in upstate New York. That we had a guy up here, I believe his name was Labowitz. He was simultaneously the director, the head of the Rochester Grievance Committee, where people would go and complain about government being corrupt, and at the same time, head of emergency room placement. So he'd decide who would get incarcerated and locked up, and he had the Chief Judge Littman of the New York State Supreme Court signing off on all these incarcerations into psychiatric wards for people who were completely normal and simply patriotic like us, including a famous case, and she's still locked up. They still hold her to this day against her will, forced into almost a medicated coma, and her name's Pat Kobylak, P-A-T-K-O-B-Y-L-A-K. One of her brothers was an economic hitman, which is if you read the book Confessions of an Economic Hitman, you'll know more about that. Basically a State Department Deputy Director of Economic Policy that threatens leaders of small foreign nations when they get elected and says, you'll do business with these 20 corporations or else. And the or else is the Marines come in, or a jackal, which is an assassin, takes him out. And he named names of the people that they had killed, and he regretted it. His name's John Perkins. It's a very, very intense book. But that's one of her brothers was an economic hitman. The other was the head of the 911 center, emergency center, and third was a CPA, I believe, and as soon as she started presenting evidence of private Federal Reserve and patriotic things, they had her locked up in a mental institution against her will. And nobody's been able to get her out to this day.
And that's I just wanted to mention that case
because that case needs to have public attention put on it someday, so I didn't mean to divert us too much, but this is their trick.
You're
they
fine.
Try to get everybody locked up. They'd lock up everybody on a psychiatric. As I've seen them do it before. One woman, her father was a local lawyer, a good one, a decent guy, had a ton of money. He died. She came to town from Connecticut to claim her father's estate. They locked the surrogate court, locked her up in a mental institution for 30 days while the attorneys came in and cleaned out the estate. The surrogate court judge, Calvaruso, signed an order that said the estate could be accessed to pay legal fees.
Eric,
and the attorney came in and cleaned it out.
We've run out of time for this evening. We'll talk about that on a different evening. I want to thank everybody for listening and joining with us this evening. Make sure that you join us tomorrow night. Thank you. God bless you. And as always, watch your backs and check your facts. God bless
you. Thank you, everyone.
Night.
I'm not interested in photo ops.
You, your husband, your wife, your children, we all need food. And with dozens of food storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Hey folks, John Stettmiller here. We at RBN understand, which is why I personally searched out a storable food company and one with similar core values to us here at RBN and of course you, the listener. Well, I found such a company. I'd like to introduce you to Numana Food Storage. Numana Food Storage
Highly nutritious, GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high fructose corn syrup, has no chemical preservatives or soy, and Numana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. To back up my claims, we've made Numana Food Storage the exclusive food sponsor of RBN. Call 888-597-0775, 888-597-0775. Order online at NumanaRepublic.com. That's N-U-M-A-N-N-A Republic.com. Food storage you'll love to eat.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Sin.